all the love for the U.S. around the world would return. It would be just fabulous. Now, third thing, politically, no more arms twisting. Negotiation with the cards on the table, no threats, no nothing. No secret call by the U.S. ambassador to UN or whatever it is to call in somebody and tell them that if you do this and that, if you insist on this as your bargaining position, we will do something and so on. I know so many such stories. Point four, get down from the idea of having a separate mandate from God, even a mandate to kill. The word is dialogue. The word is simply to say, we have something that we can contribute. And do you have from this marvelous, generous country? But others also have something. For instance, it seems that the Muslims have some good ideas about banking, like not lending more than 30% of your capital. Well, if your upper limit is 2,400 or something like that, then you're a little bit high. And if that limit is considered too high and is abolished in 2004, then the sky is the limit. Down it came. And it'll come down again. U.S. is today probably heading for a rather important crash and in all probability for a major devaluation of its currency. But let us leave that aside. Let us just say a new economic relations to other countries, conflict resolution instead of bases and invasions and interventions and special forces all around the world, negotiations with open cards without threats, and dialogue. Dialogue, dialogue, dialogue. All the Americans I know very well, and many of them Jewish Americans, have extremely good talents for this. Why couldn't that be more the tone and the tenor of U.S. policy?
We have 2 minutes before the satellite ends. Johann Galtung, as you leave the United States, what do you want to leave U.S. People here in the U.S. with, your thoughts?
We're making the distinction between the empire and the republic. And that the Republic could do beautifully without the Empire, like so many others have done before them. I can give you general public opinion studies around the world, let us say in Muslim countries. About 85% love the United States of America, like I and my Japanese wife do. About 85% hate U.S. foreign policy. You see, take that seriously. Just have a look at your military, economic, political, and cultural foreign policy. They can be changed. It's even relatively easy. Make yourself a normal country. No exceptionalism, please. A normal, wonderful country. Maybe you will find it in your interest to make North America a region, a Mexican, a Mexico, United States, Canada. That could also be a shiny light, with Mexico as a bridge to Latin America, which is now finding its own ways outside the Organization of American States, a Latin American region. Well, put your fingers in the earth, find out where you are, and you will find marvelous roads forward for an ever better American Republic.
Johann Galtung, founder of Peace Studies. His latest book is called The Fall of the U.S. Empire, and Then What? You can get a DVD of today's broadcast at democracynow.org. Oh, and by the way, Democracy Now! Has two job openings, full-time here in New York. Chief Broadcast Engineer to manage audio and video technical operations. Also, Social Media and Communications Manager. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for more details. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shruf Abdelkadous, Aaron Mate, Anjali Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Peter Curries, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. 7 years. Special thanks also to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Samantha Chamblee, Miriam Barnard, Brenda Murad, Jessel Noor, John Gerberg, Vesta Godars. Our website is democracynow.org. You can follow us on Twitter there. You can also read our full transcripts and see the video and audio podcast. We're also streaming there at democracynow.org. Tell your friends about independent media. You are the hope for this broadcast and independent media around the country and around the world. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much. When you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Amy, for repeating that for us. This is WUSB Stony Brook. I just got here. A little bit of confusion. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night. There's no concert billboard, I'm sorry. But there is Off the Wall. And a whole lot of other things I wasn't aware of. We'll be back in a moment. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this, rather historic... Well, it's not that historic. It's not historic yet. It's just kind of historic because of the things that are going on. You can barely hear the theme. The theme is up, but this cacophony of sound behind me, which apparently we've been infested with this as well. No, it's not a hornet's nest or something like that. That's happened before in this place. But no, in this particular event, this world event that's taking place right now. In case you haven't been paying attention, it's the World Cup. It's happening right now in South Africa, and what that means is that these things known as vuvuzelas, the horns that they, I don't get it myself. I really don't understand it, but they blow these things at the games constantly, all the time. And apparently, it's spread to the extent where there's a whole crowd of people at Stony Brook doing the same thing, inside and outside. And it doesn't just go on during the game. It goes on all the time. It's like being an insect. It really is. This is what it must be like to be within a beehive or something. Oh my God! All kinds of controversy as a result of this. Because when you're watching the games, when you're watching the games and you have the sound up, you can't hear the crowd. You can't hear the announcer. it's something. It's unreal, and it's causing all sorts of anger. But you know, it leads to the question: well, is it right to impose your ways upon people whose country you're visiting? This is how they do it over there, and now apparently over here as well. For some reason, I guess it's just getting into the spirit of it all. Here's something that the New York Times said about the whole thing. The loud trumpets, called vuvuzelas, will continue to be allowed for the time being at the World Cup, despite complaints from some international broadcasters, players, and fans. The tournament's organizing committee said yesterday. On Sunday, Danny Jordan, the chief World Cup organizer, told the BBC that use of the trumpets was something we are evaluating on an ongoing basis. He said he would continue banning, he would consider banning the horns if there are grounds to do so. You know, I've only been here for a few minutes. There's a story behind me getting here, and I've only known about this for a couple of minutes. But I do know this. It takes a little bit of time, but you do get used to it. You do get used to it. I'm not exactly sure how you get used to it. Maybe you just kind of forget they're there, or you just adjust yourself in some way so that you don't hear them or you're not bothered by them. And I think that's what's happening in the stadiums as well. And it happens when you watch it on television. You don't need to hear what the guy is saying, I guess. And maybe that's true for me, too. You don't need to hear what I'm saying. Although I don't know why you tune in to hear this. You know, the funny thing, the door is closed. You might ask, Emmanuel, why don't you just close the damn door? I did close the door. Yeah, if I opened the door, you don't want to even... I don't think our equipment could handle it. But, you know, I think over time we'll get used to it. There are methods. There are ways of I hear blocking these things, some technical ways. I don't know if this has been confirmed. But, well, let's finish with the story, and then we can look into that as well. So some broadcasters have been complaining since last June's Confederations Cup here that the vuvuzelas are too disruptive to the international television feeds, subduing announcers' voices and irritating viewers. Well, you know, oftentimes, it's the announcers' voices that annoy people, and this might be a way of fixing that. You know, it's entirely possible. Patrice Evra, France's captain, complained to Agence France-Presse that the horns played a role in his team's lackluster 0-0 draw with Uruguay on Friday, saying, "We can't hear one another on the pitch because of them." Well, you know, Patrice, what I say to that is they can't hear themselves either. Yeah, neither team can. You're even. So you just basically have to adjust. You have to adjust to the handicap that everybody's got to face. I mean, maybe it's going to snow on the field. Maybe it's going to rain. You know, it's entirely possible. You have to adjust, and this is this is one thing it does take getting used to. Evra also said the horns were disrupting the French players' sleep and awakening them as early as 6 a.m. at the team hotel. You know, I could swear I could hear these things last night in my house in the middle of the night. It might have just been related from watching a game earlier, and they just sort of stay in your head. But I could swear I heard them. I really, and when I sleep, I hear them all the time. Banning the trumpets would undoubtedly unleash a fierce response from South Africans who see the vuvuzelas as an indispensable part of their soccer culture. Sepp Blatter, the president of FIFA, soccer's world governing body, has supported the trumpets, saying Europeans must adjust to African traditions. Sorry, I had to sneeze there for a second. I think I'm allergic to them as well. In a statement on Monday, Rich Maconto, spokesman for the World Cup Organizing Committee, reiterated that the Vuvuzela will continue to be allowed during the tournament and the status quo has not changed, adding that complaints have been isolated. The organizing committee will continue to evaluate the use of Vuvuzelas, the statement said, and will not tolerate any Vuvuzelas landing on the field during matches or being used in a threatening manner at the stadiums, which has never before been the case. So why even bring it up? Yeah, the organizing committee said that fans had heeded requests to refrain from blowing the Vuvuzelas during national anthems and stadium announcements. Fair enough. Jordan told the BBC he would prefer singing and chanting instead of the Vuvuzelas, saying that in the days of struggle against apartheid, we were singing all through our history. It's our ability to sing that inspired and drove the emotions. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, if you had the Vuvuzelas going 24-7, I think the apartheid leaders would have fled the country a lot earlier. Yeah, and this might be considered as a weapon in all kinds of places. It's, you know, you get used to it. I'm not used to it yet, but you might get there. Okay, here's what I'm looking at on the net right now. Now, a Vuvuzela is tuned, to use the term quite loosely, at the B-flat below middle C. I have no idea what I just said. I'm reading off the BBC site here. It's tuned at the B-flat below middle C and has a similar frequency to speech tones. This makes it particularly tricky for broadcasters to tune out, as to do so would dampen the commentators' voices and not in a good way. Here's a quote from an expert. I'm looking at its wave patterns. There are at least six very strong harmonics in there. It would sound really horrible to notch these out. If one coincides with the vowel sound E, you wouldn't be able to hear the E's in the commentary. It would sound rather unnatural. And, yeah, I suppose that's true. Various online vendors claim to sell Vuvuzela filters, such as a 45-minute MP3 noise-canceling track to play during each half. And a German computer programmer has posted instructions online in German for building your own using a sound card-equipped computer and specialist software. It's physically impossible to play a sound to cancel out another sound coming from your television. It sounds constant, but the noise is too random to be canceled out. How can they know when England will fail to make a save and the Vuvuzelas will go even more crazy? Yeah, that's entirely possible. Yeah, it's mayhem, but you know, it's the World Cup. It happens every 4 years. 32 teams gather in some place, and this is the first time it's ever happened in Africa, which is amazing in and of itself. I guess we learn a bit about each other's cultures, and we see different teams playing each other. I'm going to give out a few spoilers, so just so you know, if you haven't seen the games today, I saw only one game today. There are three played per day. So if you don't want to find out what happened between North Korea and Brazil, you might want to tune away right now, because I'm gonna talk about it. Because I saw that game live. Usually what I do is I tape them, because they start at 7 in the morning. And if I'm up at 7 in the morning, it's because I'm still up. But the game today was very important, because North Korea, for the first time since 1966, was in the World Cup. And that's a big deal. In 1966, they made it all the way to the quarterfinals. Or was it the semifinals? You know, I'm not even sure. But they really had a bunch of upsets, and they endeared a whole lot of people to them. And it's really kind of a cool thing when a team that nobody knows anything about, from a country that nobody knows anything about, suddenly is able to present itself on the world forum. Now, today was probably the biggest day in the history of that country's football league, or in the history of their football, certainly, because here they are playing in front of the entire world, facing Brazil. And Brazil is not the team you want to play. Brazil is definitely not the team that you want to see on the other side of the pitch. And I was worried that it would be something crazy like you know, 14-0 or something horrible like that. But you know what? They played the entire first half without a score. They played them to a scoreless draw after one half, which I thought was incredible. They did a really good job. And it's Brazil. You know, these are the guys that have been world champions more than anybody. They've qualified for every single World Cup. And here's North Korea, the lowest-ranked team in the entire competition, keeping them scoreless after 45 minutes, which I was floored. I was really amazed by that. Then, of course, it started to unravel a bit. And one goal was scored against them, then a second goal. And at that point, I was just hoping, you know, keep it 2-0 and you might have a chance. You might have a chance of pushing ahead of Ivory Coast, at least. Maybe tying Portugal. Maybe even winning against Portugal. It's possible. And getting to the next stage. But they would have to beat... they'd have to beat two other teams. They'd have to be ahead of two other teams. There's only four teams in each little division. You have to be one of the top two to advance to the next part. But then the amazing thing happened. North Korea scored a goal against Brazil. It's the most incredible thing to see that happen. That is the equivalent of a victory as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, it really is. I can't even hear them anymore. I can't. It's like they're gone. But you know what? We have music. There are songs about the Vuvuzelas. Yeah, let's listen so we can just take a break from this for a moment or two. We'll be back. Yeah. Okay, there we are. all right, I think we managed to close another door out there and get him a little bit lower. That's good. Okay, Vuvuzelas, yeah, they'll drive you crazy. The World Cup doesn't end until July 11th, so get used to them. They've been controversial. They've been associated with permanent noise-induced hearing loss, cited as a possible safety risk when spectators cannot hear evacuation announcements, and potentially spread colds and flu viruses on a greater scale than coughing or shouting. Vuvuzelas have also been blamed for drowning the sound in the atmosphere of football games. Commentators have described the sound as annoying and satanic, and compared it with a stampede of noisy elephants, a deafening swarm of locusts, a goat on the way to slaughter, and a giant hive full of very angry bees. The sound level of the instrument has been measured at 127 decibels, contributing to football matches with dangerously high sound pressure levels for unprotected ears. A new model, however, announced on June 14th, wait a minute, that was that was yesterday, has a modified mouthpiece, which is claimed to reduce the volume by 20 decibels. Wow. Well, if you're looking on who to blame for this, This type of plastic horn or trumpet has been used in Mexican stadiums since the 1970s. They're originally made out of tin. They became popular in South Africa in the 1990s. Let's see. Kaiser Chiefs FC fan Freddie Saddam Mock claims to have invented the vuvuzela by adapting an aluminum version as early as 1965 from a bicycle horn after removing the black rubber to blow with his mouth. He later found it to be too short and joined the pipe to make it longer. He has photos of himself in the 1970s and 80s at local South African games and international games in 92 and 96, and at the 1998 World Cup in France holding the aluminum vuvuzela. He says the instrument was banned as authorities ruled it a dangerous weapon, which prompted him to find a plastic company that could manufacture it. And in 2001, South African-based company Messenseding Sport began to mass-produce a plastic version. Vuvuzelas have been said to be based on kudu horn instruments and thus rooted in African history, but this is disputed. During the entire match, supporters blow vuvuzelas frantically in an attempt to kill off their opponents. Although, you know, they were blowing them just as hard when South Africa had the ball, so I'm not exactly sure how that works. In 2005, prominent black South African columnist and former sports writer John Quillane described the vuvuzela as an instrument from hell that had caused him to abandon watching live games and urged that it be banned before the 2010 World Cup. In early 2010, members of the Nazareth Baptist Church claimed that the vuvuzela belonged to their church and threatened to pursue legal action to stop fans playing vuvuzela at the World Cup. I don't take much credence in that. All right, here's another vuvuzela-based song. We're just going to hear a little bit of it because I don't really like it that much. I'm just going to turn this down because, you know, it sounds like some cheesy song from a 1970s big hair group. I don't quite understand how that works. I like the, you know, the sound effects and all that. Well, you know, not the sound effects so much, but the sounds of crowds and things like that is kind of cool. I was in an interesting place on Sunday, actually two interesting places, because there were two games being played. And this is a fun thing to do. If you find yourself in New York City or in any city, really, just migrate towards a place that caters to a particular ethnic group and be there when the World Cup is being played. It's fascinating. First of all, you don't really hear this because there are so many people around you that you can't really hear what's being said on the TV anyway. You're watching the screen. For the first game, and this started at 10 in the morning. I had to be up at 10 in the morning for this. I went to a Serbian place. And since I just got back from Serbia, I thought that was kind of cool to sort of see people of that country cheering a team. And realized that it meant a great deal to the people back where I had just come from. And then, right after that game, across the street, as it happens, was a German game inside a German place. And well, as you may know, the Serbs lost and the Germans won. But it's going to get really interesting on Friday, this Friday coming up at 7 in the morning. when Serbia plays Germany. So it's going to be a battle of the street, I suppose. The Germans on one side, the Serbs on the other. And, of course, Germans have a pretty highly ranked team, so it's probably going to be a bloodbath, but still, it'll be an interesting one. All right. But what happened? What happened? They're gone. Hang on. Okay. I just learned something really cool. They have dinner at 6:30. Okay. They break for dinner at 6:30. All of them. Okay. Well, you know, I hope they have a nice leisurely meal so we can, it's almost too quiet. Isn't it? There's something missing now. It's so quiet. Wow. Okay. Well, it was just kind of sudden. I wasn't expecting that to happen. They all stopped at the same time, too. Vuvuzelas, yeah. Get used to them. How do you stop something like that? How can you possibly ever stop something that has gotten so popular? I've listened to football crowds chant and sing and do all kinds of things, and it seems to make some amount of sense. You're trying to get a message out. But when you're just blowing a horn incessantly, maybe I'm just missing the message. Maybe I'm just missing the strategic use of it, but it just sounds like the same noise all the time. But that's probably just me not being aware of what's actually happening. Hopefully we'll be able to take phone calls. I wasn't expecting to because of all the noise, but I guess maybe we can do it then after all. That'd be kind of cool. Our number is 631-632-9872. We'll open the phone lines up in just a little bit. I've been wandering around, actually working a lot on the upcoming Hope Conference. If you don't know about it, www.hope.net, and that's taking place at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City, July 16th through 18th. Hackers on Planet Earth, going to be pretty amazing and pretty controversial. I don't know if you've been reading recent newspapers, but couple of people involved in all sorts of shenanigans. I'm not going to get into it too much here because that's what Off the Hook is for, but you can listen to the last episode of Off the Hook and hear all about it. But basically, we're talking about leaked documents and all kinds of government agents and hackers and things like that all involved in one big mess. And of course, the Hope Conference is a place to sort it all out and figure out what's going on. Yeah, more information, hope.net. We'll have our first talks announced. In fact, we're going to have all of our talks announced in the next couple of days, and we're basically scheduling the whole thing. It's amazing when you have 100 different speakers that you have to put together, talking about all kinds of technical and social issues for 3 days in New York City. It's quite a monumental task, but it's a rewarding one for sure. So that's what I've been doing, in addition to having the World Cup on in the background and just hearing those noises and various other things like that. It's been a bit stressful, I guess. And you know, I mentioned, speaking of stress, I mentioned that I had a little bit of difficulty getting over here. You know what happens? I have to go past the Port Jefferson Ferry to get here, and sometimes, if I don't leave at exactly the right moment, sometimes I pass by right when it's letting people off. And when that happens, you wind up with a bunch of dimwits from Connecticut. And I can say that now because our signal no longer goes to Connecticut. Well, I'll find out if it does. But in this particular case, I got stuck behind somebody from Quebec. They had a Quebec license plate. And, you know, they were going so super slow. And I think I know what was going on. I think I figured it out in all the time that it took me to get over here. It took quite a bit of time. I think they were reading the speed limit sign and applying it in kilometers, because the speed limit was 30 at one point, and we must have been going about 12 miles an hour. I think they're being extra careful because it's really like, 18 or 19? I don't know. And then when it was 40, they sped up into the 20s. And, you know, they were either being super cautious or they really hadn't heard of our crazy system. I wish, for God's sake, we'd get on the metric system already and stay there. So this kind of thing didn't happen. So I had to ride behind this person who, of course, was going right to Stony Brook, almost to Stony Brook. One light away, they went somewhere else. But that's how I walked in here and met all the Vuvuzelas at the last possible moment. Very frustrated. But, you know, it pales in comparison to the frustration I experienced last week when I, oh, my God, you ever have something happen where you just have to go through hell to do something really, really simple? So incredibly simple. Something that should take a minute winds up costing you your life practically. All I wanted. I ran out of soap, okay? Is that a big deal? I ran out of soap, so I figured, you know what? I'll go to the supermarket and buy more. Yeah, that's that was my fatal mistake, is thinking it would be that easy. Went there, you know, no problem. Of course, you know, at night you have to, for some reason, walk in the exit of these supermarkets. I don't know why they do that, but you have to walk through the exit and go past the cashier and make your purchases and then come back. Well, this supermarket has a bunch of automated checkout things. Those are fun. Those can be interesting. You can play games with them, have them speak in foreign languages, do all sorts of interesting things. But sometimes they can be very frustrating. Sometimes they reject your purchase for some reason. Sometimes you wind up having something heavy that you have to lift, and then when you put it down, it gives some kind of error because you put something down that's heavy. Other times it thinks that you're trying to steal something because you didn't put something exactly where it should be, and it just it can get annoying as well because there's nobody to yell at. You have to yell at a machine. Well, anyway, I went up to the machine, and the machine, you know how you scan the barcodes? I think we've all done this by now. We've all scanned barcodes now. You know, a few years ago, that wasn't the case, but you hold the barcode up to the little screen, and it goes beep, and then you move on from there. Well, it went beep, but there was nothing on the screen. It was just beeping. The machine wasn't working. So I went to the, there was a person, there was a cashier next to the automated machine. So I went there, and there was a person with about 25 items in front of me. And right when they got to the last item, the cashier said, "Oh, I'm closing. Go to aisle number one." And I was like, "Really? You're going to close on me? I've one thing here, one item, and I have to go to..." All right, fine. I'll go to aisle number one. Of course, I went to aisle number one, and it was completely closed off because she meant aisle number two, but fine, whatever. I went to aisle number two. There was a guy there with about 50 items, and he was literally arguing over every single one. Yeah, talking about purchases. $4.99. No, that was $4.98. It said $4.98 on the thing, not $4.99. Literally arguing over a penny. No kidding. It was like some kind of bizarre gag that I was the victim of. How much is this person going to take? And then, to top everything, the cashier. There was some kind of question over chicken breast that he had gotten. Apparently, he wanted chicken breast from the left side of the chicken, and he had ones from the right side. I don't know. But she said, "You know what? I'll go back and get them for you." I'll go back and get them for you? Are you related to this guy? Why are you leaving your post, going all the way to the back of the store, because that's always where they keep these things, all the way in the back, and you're going to go and get him? I have one item. I have soap. That's all I have. I just want to buy soap and be out of here. About 12 minutes have gone by so far at this point, from when I actually had it in my hand to when I was trying to get out. So, you know, I'm starting to get impatient. No, actually, I was already impatient. And I went up to one of those other automated cashier things. It said on the screen there that it was closed. I don't know why they close these things. They're automated. Why do they have to close them? Are they on lunch break? I walked up to that one and I decided, you know, what the hell? I'm going to scan it anyway and see what happens. I scanned it, and this loud voice comes out of the machine saying, "This aisle is closed." And that's when the other cashier, the first one, the one who had kicked me off, repeated it to me. He said, "That's closed." Like, oh, is that what it said? Okay, I don't understand machine. I only understand rude humans. Great. Okay, thank you so much for that. So I got back in line. And then, you know, there was a woman in back of me with about 30 items. And guess what happens after another 5 minutes? The first cashier says, "Oh, you can come over here now. I'm open again. Does anybody offer to let me go first? I have one item." No, she doesn't call me first. The woman behind me doesn't let me go first. You know, at that point, I realized between man and machine, I've had it. I did not buy soap that night. Yeah. And, you know, the story continued, too, because the next day I went over to the big Price Club-type place. It wasn't Price Club. I'm not giving a plug for them. It was a place like that. And, you know, that's where you buy more soap than you ever need in your life. But to get there, I had to jump through all these hoops because I always make the mistake of trying to do more than one thing in errands. For instance, I was picking up my car, which had been fixed at the repair shop. I actually got a lift over there, and it's a complicated story. I got a lift to where the van was. I was bringing the van over to get repaired and picking up the car that had already been repaired. Yeah, that's what I was doing. So I was driving the van to the car repair place to pick up the car, and then I was picking up food after that so I could grab something at the local Bosnian place and then go and get my soap. And no, it's not. There is no local Bosnian place. I'm only saying that so that I don't give a plug for the actual place I went to. It would be nice if there was a local Bosnian place, though. Anyway, so I drove the van over to the car repair place. The idea was to leave the van there and pick up the car and then go to the Bosnian place, get the food, and then go to the Price Club place and get the soap. You know? Simple. Except when I parked the van, got into the car, closed the door on the car, the door didn't close on the car. The door was broken. The door broke. It was stuck open. And I had to write a big note and leave the car there and take the van instead. And then I had to race to the Bosnian place because they were closing. Got there 5 minutes before they closed. But then by that delay, by having to go there and write the note and all that, now I had to race to the Price Club place to get the soap. And I got there 2 minutes before they closed and was lectured by the person coming in saying, you know, we're closing in 2 minutes. Yeah, I know. Fascinating conversation. But, you know, far less frustrating was actually fighting a parking ticket, which I got to do this week as well. Right before going to Dayton, the same van I was just driving in to get the soap, I had parked outside an apartment in New York City, and we were loading the van with all kinds of things for Dayton, you know, shirts and some other things. We don't have to get into what it was we were loading, but we were loading. We had it parked on the street, and during a period of time, we were still upstairs debating one issue or another. I got a ticket for parking a commercial vehicle on a residential street. Yeah. You know, you're not allowed to do that between 9 p.m. and I think 5 a.m. in New York City. You cannot park a commercial vehicle on a residential street. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't a very good way to kick off a trip to Dayton, a 12-hour ride, getting a $65 ticket. And I was pretty upset by that. And, of course, I realized I didn't have a chance in hell of fighting this thing. So I kind of accepted that right away. I'm in the hole $65. And then, you know, I started thinking about it over the weeks. I started thinking, you know, I might be able to fight this thing. If I can say that, you know, I was legitimately loading the van, I can prove that that's my place. I live there. Here's an envelope with my address on it. That's where I got the tickets, right in front. Maybe there's a chance. So, of course, I procrastinate like I always do, and wound up going down to the ticket place in Lower Manhattan on Wednesday before off the hook last week. And they close at 4:30. On the ticket, it says you have until 4:30 to get there. And I drove the smart car in, figuring I could just drive in, park, and get there. Of course, you know, traffic was horrible, and I had to battle all kinds of nitwits on the road, but I made it. And then I had to figure out how to park, because there's no place to park around there. I was willing to pay to park, you know, pay one of those muni meter things, except they all said no standing until 6 p.m., so you couldn't even park there. So I had to find a space that only the smart car could fit into, where parking was allowed, and throw money into the thing, and then run to the place before 4:30. I got there at about 4:10. Again, you know, I'm always running at deadlines. I don't know why this is. I left to get there so early. I left so much time, but it just didn't work out that way. So I got there, said, here I am. I'm here to fight a ticket. And they gave me all this paperwork to fill out. I filled it out. They said, okay, now just wait in this line and stay there. And I stayed there, waited in line. At about 4:22 or so, I got to the front of the line, and somebody took my paper, looked at it, and said, oh, no, this is a commercial plate. You have to fight that upstairs. And they close at 4. They close at 4. You know, first of all, you guys told me to go here. All right, you looked at the ticket and you told me to go here. Second of all, nowhere on this ticket does it say that different hours apply for commercial plates. Doesn't say that any place. And, you know, it's like I'm speaking Swahili. Nobody can understand what I'm saying. Nobody understands my point. And I'm asking, well, is there somebody here that can possibly pass judgment on me? That's all I'm asking for. I fully expect to be found guilty. But I just want my day in court. That's all. I think I've earned it. Driven all the way here, ran like a maniac into this building, was told the wrong thing and given the wrong information on the ticket. I think I deserve my day in court. But all they would say was, no, come back tomorrow. Like it's the easiest thing in the world to do. You know, you can come back tomorrow because you work here. You have to be here every day. But for some of us, it's a bit of a haul. It's a bit of a hassle. So, didn't get anywhere on that front. Then I had another question. Because I got this ticket on the, I think it was on the 18th of May. Hang on, looking at a calendar here. No, it was the 19th of May. Okay. That's cool that we have a calendar. So, 19th of May, a Wednesday. Wednesday, actually, you know what? No, it was the 20th. Because it was after midnight. It was after midnight when I got the ticket. So, it was Thursday morning. So, it was May 20th. Thursday morning, I got the ticket. Now, my question was, okay, you know, when is the deadline for this ticket? It's supposed to be 30 days. 30 days from the 20th would be what? The 19th. Well, the 19th is a Saturday. So does that mean I have until Monday or until Friday? And you know, nobody there knew the answer to that. They just kept saying, come back tomorrow. It's like they're robots. They had no way of saying anything else. Just come back tomorrow. Well, I didn't go back the next day, but on Friday, I decided to go in, except I decided to do it a little bit differently this time. I decided to head to Queens instead, because, well, it's closer, for one thing, to where I was starting from, and maybe they'd be nicer in Queens. I don't know. It's always possible that that you might find nicer people in a different borough. I don't know. I've just seen that to be the case. So I started really early this time, still ran into traffic, but I got there a little bit after 3 this time, found the place, except once again, I'm having the trouble with parking. Where do I park? I was looking around, I saw a space, parked, and then saw a sign saying, this is for trucks only, you can't stand here. I'm beginning to panic. Where am I going to park so I can fight this parking ticket? I'm going to have to walk a mile. Then this guy walking down the street with a hero sandwich sees me and says, hey, buddy, come over here. Park here. You won't get a ticket. Now, I trust anybody who's walking down the street with a hero sandwich. I just do. It's one of my weaknesses, because it seems like they know what's what. They know where things are, and they're looking out for you. And that's exactly what he said. I want to look out for a fellow New Yorker. If you park here, you won't get a ticket. And I said, you know, that's a driveway. It goes into that building. He said, yeah, don't worry. you won't get a ticket. I said, you know, I am fighting a ticket here. I don't want to get another one. He said, you won't. So I said, okay, I'm going to trust this person because I really have no choice at this point, and park my car illegally while I'm going in to fight a parking ticket. I mean, you just sort of have to do things like this. You have to throw caution to the wind occasionally and just go with the flow. And that's what I did. And went into the other place, filled out the same paperwork again, waited in line, making sure to say, this is a commercial ticket. So do I have to go someplace different? And they looked at me like I had two heads. What do you mean? Why would we go someplace different for a commercial ticket? It's all the same. Okay, whatever. So I waited in line, and eventually I got to the front of the line and was called into the room with one of the hearing officers. I guess they were a judge. Not really sure. They're a full judge or whatever. The first thing he said was, okay, what do you want me to do with this? Okay, I don't know if that's a trick question or what, but obviously, you know, I'd like you to dismiss it, but I didn't quite say it like that. You know, you have to act nice and humble. You have to, you know, if you're wearing a hat, take your hat off. You have to, you know, bow your head down and say sir and all that kind of thing. And you got to play the game. And so, you know, I basically started to explain the story, and he seemed very dubious of it. But then I started to present evidence. I said, look, here's an envelope with that address on it. Here's my parking permit from Dayton that proves that I drove the van there. Here's my registration. Here's all kinds of things that you know, bear out my story. And there was a point where he just started to listen and say, you know, okay, all right, you do have a right to load a van commercially if that's what you're doing. I'm going to look you up and see if you have any other tickets on this block for doing the same thing. And if you do, it's not going to go well for you. And of course, I didn't. So I wound up winning. I never expected to. Everybody told me I had no chance. I didn't think I had a chance. But, you know, it just goes to show, when the chips are down, you got to just keep coming back. You know, I was so frustrated after driving all the way in and being sent to the wrong place on Wednesday and being met with all kinds of obstinance. So frustrated, I wanted to give up and not bother. But by trying again, it worked out. And of course, there was no ticket on my car when I got back outside. Everything was cool. The guy was right. It was a very nice day in Queens. Wasn't expecting that. I was expecting, you know, horror show. Sometimes it happens. You know, I was also expecting to be able to buy soap without the Spanish Inquisition, but these things happen too. Sometimes it goes the other way. All right, we do have some time for phone calls. If there's anyone out there that wants to talk to us about any particular issue that's out there, I know there are all sorts of issues. And before the Vuvuzelas come back, you know, Finn's going to have to deal with this. They're going to come back during his show, I'm pretty sure, because, well, dinner's got to be, what, an hour max, I think, unless... I don't know. What we're going to do is, okay, we have a feature that we haven't done in a while, and I'm going to give out the phone number, 631-632-9872. And if by the time we come back after this song, there are calls on the line, we're going to go into delay and take calls very quickly. This is from the album Good Friends Are For Keeps, the telephone company album, the 100th anniversary album that came out back in, 1976? Or thereabouts. You know, I don't see the year on here, but I'm pretty sure that's what the year was. And we're going to hear a song called Memphis by Johnny Rivers. And it's described in the album as such, an even more desperate suitor, referring to a previous suitor, I suppose, is portrayed by Johnny Rivers in the 1964 hit Memphis. He asks information for his sweetheart's number in that city. But boy, is he vague. Her home is on the south side, high upon a ridge, just a little ways from the Mississippi Bridge. Now, that description might have been adequate in the early days when Central knew everybody. Central was what you would call the phone company. They would know everybody in town. But the harried Memphis operator of the 1960s was entitled to some rather more substantial clues than that, I would say. All right, let's take a listen to Memphis. Again, 631-632-9872. Give us a call if you want to be on the air in the next few minutes.
Information. Give me Memphis, Tennessee. Help me find a party and try to get in touch with me. She could not leave a number, but I know a place to call. Cause my uncle took the message and he wrote it on the wall. Help me, information. Get in touch with my Marie. She's the only one who'd call me if I'm Memphis, Tennessee. Her home is on the south side, high up on a ridge, just a half a mile from the Mississippi Bridge. Thank you. that trickled from her eye. But we were pulled apart because her mom did not agree and tore apart our happy home in Memphis, Tennessee. Help me information, more than that I cannot add. Only that I miss her and all the fun we had. Marie is only 6 years old. Information, please. Try to put me through to her in Memphis, Tennessee.
This is Dr. Bill Cheshire here to say WUSB is the radio listening choice for more incestuous families than any other radio station.
And we're back. Here we are in delay. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. Yeah, that was a rather strange idea, I know. Let's take some phone calls. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hello?
Yes, you want to turn down your radio? Go ahead. See, that's what I mean. It's going to get very confusing.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Wading River.
Okay. Yeah, you turn the radio down or it's going to get very confusing. It's good to hear yourself on the radio, I know, but just you're 7 seconds ago.
Oh, you know what? I just realized what was going on there. Okay.
Yeah. What's on your mind?
Actually, I wanted to bring something up, which I haven't heard a lot of people bring attention to.
This is the place to do that. That's what we're here for.
We are in the middle of what would be considered, I guess, a man-made crisis, and what goes with that would be maybe different than, say, an earthquake or a horrible hurricane or something else.
You're talking about the oil spill?
I am curious to hear your thoughts and if you've heard anything in regards to other countries, any other country in the world, extending their help to us in this horrible catastrophe going on in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, I know that England has said they're going to step in. I think what they said was they're going to help BP. That's what it sounded like anyway. I have not been aware of substantial aid being offered by other countries. Of course, the United States probably has the most ability to help in a situation like this, since we seem to be the most industrialized in the area. I do know other countries are being affected by this. Cuba, for instance, is going to be affected severely by it, and I would imagine they're kind of peeved by that. Yeah, I mean, basically, what I believe should be happening, Obama's giving a major address on this tonight, by the way, and I urge everybody to listen to this. Hopefully he'll be very decisive and come down hard on BP and make them pay severely for this, because it is their fault. Of course, it could have been any oil company's fault, but the fact is they weren't prepared for this. They need to get everybody who knows how to do anything together and work together with them, not tell us that this is going to take months or years to fix.
Absolutely. And the urgency, you know, from the rest of the world, or the lack of urgency, that's what's bothering me. Not so much because it's going to affect anybody else, but I feel like we are there anytime anything happens in the world, and we're there, like, first or in the first couple of countries to really just say, we'll be right there, you know, the American Red Cross, the United States, you know, Navy is always there right offshore with hospital boats when something happens. I don't understand where the public is on this. I haven't heard anybody wondering who in the international community has our back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I would imagine this should be a global effort. It's just, there was a Chinese freighter that had an incident off the coral reef in Australia a couple of months ago, which we've forgotten about. And how much aid did we lend to that? You know, I don't think we lent any.
Right.
So this is something, yeah, you're right. The world has to become a lot more involved in this. But we have to also become more accessible to the world to allow them to do that. We can't try and make it like we have the situation under control. We don't have the situation under control. The situation is out of control. It's a catastrophe. It's a disaster. as you said, a far different level than any earthquake or hurricane or anything like that. And this is something that will probably have a much longer and more tragic effect.
Yep.
It could destroy fishing for many, many years, and could destroy wildlife for many, many years, if not permanently. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a real wake-up call. But you know, when I was watching the World Cup, I watch it on Canadian channels, so I happen to see newscasts every now and then. I saw one from Newfoundland. They're opening up a brand new deep sea oil drilling rig, and they're training people on how to react to a spill. But mm-hmm. they're enthusiastic about it. They're enthusiastic about this new oil rig going on. And you know, we have to do better than this. We have to have more green technology, realize the risks of this kind of thing, and avoid those risks whenever possible.
The common sense thing. It's not a left right thing. It is just like a no brainer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see. My major problem right now is I don't see the urgency from my own government in the way. Not even as in regards to having anything to compare this to. You know, this isn't...
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think Obama has been measured in his tone, but I do think he's very angry, and I do think he's very resolute in getting this dealt with. Of course, his actions will show whether or not that's true. What we don't need right now are a lot of sound bites and things that don't actually go anywhere. I want to make sure that they're held accountable, and so far I haven't seen anything to indicate they won't be held accountable. I see this cozy partnership between the oil companies and the U.S. government coming to an end, or at least being severely threatened, and I think if there's any good to come out of this, it's that.
Yeah, I would be... I'd take a little more cynical look at it, and I really hope that in a back room somewhere, they're telling Barack that they're going to, you know, fund his campaign and do whatever his campaigns and whoever he needs to get money, and they're going to take care of it.
Yeah, you know, I sure hope it doesn't work that way. I'm gonna. You know, there's plenty of room for cynicism, plenty of time for cynicism, and we'll know soon enough if something like that does happen. But right now, I'm hoping that he takes the high road and as he said, kicks their ass.
I honestly do hope that too. But I'm saying on the other end of it, maybe he's putting his thumb on them in a more sinister way, saying,
"Yeah,
we are investigating you in a criminal way, and we're going to do what we have to do." So
yeah, but you know, if even one penny got to him in 2012, it looks so bad. It really would.
I would like to see him go gangster a little.
Yeah,
you know,
I would too. Well, let's see what happens tonight. Listen, sir, we're out of time. Thanks for the call. Very interesting. Yeah, unfortunately,
all right, take care.
sorry to interrupt myself, but unfortunately, we are out of time. We'll be back next week. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and yeah, watch out for the vuvuzelas. They're everywhere. Good night. Yeah, you're listening to Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Finn with you till the 9 p.m. hour, giving some tickets away to some movies and some cool stuff. Stay tuned for some great music.
Everybody's in movies, doesn't matter who you are. There are stars in every city, in every house and on every street. And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Don't step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile, that's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess, and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom, because she wanted to be alone. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood. And some who suffered in vain. Rudolph Valentino looks very much alive, and he looks up ladies' dresses as they sadly pass him by. Avoid stepping on Bela Lugosi, 'cause he's liable to turn and bite. Hers was such a lonely life. If you covered him with garbage, George Saunders would still have style. And if you stamped on Mickey Rooney, he would still turn round and smile. But please don't tread on dearest Marilyn, 'cause she's not very tough. She should have been made. She was only made of flesh and blood. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. some who suffered in vain. Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in showbiz. It doesn't matter who you are. And those who are successful, be always on your guard. Success walks hand in hand with failure along Hollywood Boulevard. I wish my life was a non-stop Hollywood movie show, a fantasy world of celluloid villains and celluloid heroes never feel any pain. And celluloid heroes never really die.
Moonshine.